Hey there, folks, and welcome to Tri-State of Mind's Tri-State at the Plate. Today we're hosting our first annual Prospect Spectacular. And while we might not be talking about love, or while we might actually be talking about love, of our love of prospects, today we're going to be talking about the top organizational prospects in Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Detroit. So we're going to talk about first how the prospects are organized, kind of how we're grouping these guys. And then from there, we'll go through each of the categories and the prospects that we think are in each category. And at the end, we'll wrap everything up with our tweet mails. So we got a couple tweet mails.
Tweet mails.
Tweet mails from
still working on that title.
Tweet mails from the fans. Still going with that. Almost day one of the regular season here, Red.
Bob's shaking his head.
I wish we have a fan come out of somewhere and just say, you know, I got a really good idea. Name that segment and just send it to us.
We got nothing here, folks.
Nothing yet.
Well, you know, and we have geographic statistics that tell us we have fans in Seattle, Washington, San Francisco, Erie, Pennsylvania, Baltimore, Maryland. We need some advice. You know,
come on, Baltimore.
Somewhere in
one
the country.
From China, right? Too.
Well, we had a feed hit from China.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. So thanks, listeners, for tuning in from everywhere.
Yeah,
that's great.
If they have any advice in China, you know,
please,
we'll take that too.
Yeah. So when we're looking at our prospects, and we were talking about this before we started rolling today, we were kind of trying to figure out how to best categorize the prospects. So the categories that we came up with, we tried to divide them up into a couple different groups. So we decided one of our groups we're going to categorize as studs. So we'll talk about the studs that are in each of our organizations. We're going to look at projectable players. So these may be some young players that have high ceilings, have a lot of talent, but are still a really long ways away from contributing. Then we're going to look at contributors. These are players who you could potentially see right away this season or within the first few months of the season that can contribute to the major league club right away. And then we're going to wrap up with players to watch in each of our organizations. So Jason's going to be in charge of the Cleveland Indians prospects. Bob's going to be talking about the Detroit Tigers, and I'll be talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates prospects. So let's start it off with the studs in each of ours, because that's the most fun. Everybody seems to love to talk about, like, oh, this player's coming up and he's going to be crushing this season. So let's start off with the studs, and let's look at the studs that we have in the Cleveland Indians organization, Jason.
All right. Well, the first stud is Francisco Lindor. You know, some people thought there was a bit of a competition for number one prospect this year in the Indian system with the addition of Bauer. But when you see Lindor play this spring, there's no competition. Lindor is so young. He's so gifted defensively. He really right now could hang in there on a major league team at shortstop as far as his defense is concerned. His bat is not quite there yet. His floor as far as his bat is probably an average major league second baseman. His ceiling is probably a plus bat with a lot of doubles power. So that's kind of where his development is right now. As far as his bat, you know, I saw him play in a spring training game on TV the other day, and you could just see the development occurring right there while he's standing at the plate. He was up with the game tied in the ninth inning and a runner on second. He'd already ripped a double earlier in the game. The game was tense. It was like it was an actual game at that moment. You know, Lindor wants to impress the Indians. The A's pitcher wants to impress his team. You know, there's a lot of tension. Lindor whiffed really badly on a first curveball that was in the dirt. You know, you could see the look on his face. He recognized, okay, I was a little too aggressive there. Steps back in the box. The pitcher throws the same pitch, and he doesn't chase it. Then he tries to hook a curveball around the corner of the plate. He doesn't chase it. Then he leaves the curveball right over the plate, and Lindor ripped it. I mean, just absolutely crushed it, but foul, and then strikes out on a changeup. But you could see that progression. You know, he learned from that first pitch, okay, that was too aggressive. And then by the third curveball, it's like, okay, you're going to leave that up. I know what to do with it now. So he's still developing in that sense. He's the hands-down you know, stud of this system. He's so young and has such great defensive abilities. If you look at Bauer, I would say he's the other stud who came over in the trade, of course, this offseason. His biggest plus is he has a really deep arsenal of pitches. He has many, many pitches. There's at least three that are plus pitches. He can touch 98 with his fastball when he really cuts loose on it. He has a nice 12-6 curve. And then just to kind of show you the depth of pitches, he has a reverse slider he works on. He has a different curveball that's more of a 9-3 that he calls the bird, where his middle finger is sticking up, and that's the last, that's the last thing the hitter sees. So, you know, I mean, he has so many different pitches. There is a bit of a, you know, okay, well, maybe we should pare this down and focus on five, maybe, you know. Yeah. But the way Lindor is, or I'm sorry, Bauer is, the more you learn about him, he loves to tweak those kind of things. He loves to, maybe if I, you know, move my finger just a little bit on this pitch, I can get a little more break, or maybe I can get more bite if I throw this way, or, you know, so he's definitely a student of pitching and the biomechanics of pitching, which, you know, you hear about more and more with him. His biggest fault, I guess, is he really needs to refine his control. He has an unorthodox, high-effort kind of delivery. But when you do watch it more closely, the arm action in the delivery is pretty loose and fluid. It's not kind of an unorthodox action for his arm. It's just kind of the way he delivers his body towards the plate is unorthodox. And then, of course, you know, he has a unique personality.
Did not play well in Arizona.
That Miguel Montero didn't really like so much.
That,
and
that whole organization did not like it so much.
No. And the Indians are really, really taking an open mind to all of his quirky personality traits. You know, I think Terry Francona made the comment when someone said something about the big pole he was carrying around to warm up his arm. It's like a weighted resistance pole kind of thing. And his comment was, you know, well, we've talked about it, and we talked about it with the training staff, and if he wants to carry it around, that's his thing.
Yeah, you know? And it seems, I think we were talking about that the other day, how it was good for him to come to Cleveland because that organization is looking at him and saying, listen, you do what you do.
Yeah.
And then it kind of seems like they're going to let him do what he does until it doesn't work.
Exactly.
And then at that point,
I think that is kind of the unspoken plan in Cleveland is you can do whatever you want till it fails.
Yeah.
And then when we've got all this invested in you, then we'll talk about what we want you to do.
Right.
You know, and supposedly, even before the Bauer trade, they were talking about reintroducing a lot more long toss into their conditioning program for pitchers. So
he's the right guy to show you that.
So, you know, I think maybe they were moving slightly towards his direction of, you know, his way of thinking, his way of conditioning, not you know, all the crazy things he does. But so I think maybe that's why they're a little more accepting of his quirks.
Yeah. Well, let's look at Detroit's studs. Who are the, or should I say stud, who's the big prospect we have in Detroit's system?
They have one. Yes. As a result of the absence of draft picks the last several years, I basically have it boiled down to a former, most recent MVP futures game player, Nick Castellanos, as our one stud in Tigers organization. He performed very, very well this spring, and he earned a opening job with the Toledo Mudhens beginning the year, despite struggling in Erie at the end of last year. He has a massive frame with high upside and currently will continue to play outfield.
Yeah, and I think we talked about that on the last podcast where we were wondering whether Castellanos was destined for AAA to start off the year or whether AAA was his destination because of his good play. I thought to start off the season, and I know I've been saying this all preseason, all spring training, that I thought Castellanos would be back in Erie. They'd give him another shot just to get some more consistent at-bats in AA. Because when he got promoted to AA, he didn't dominate quite like he did at the lower levels. So I was kind of surprised to see him end up in Toledo without having to really demonstrate that he can own AA. But obviously, you know, Detroit's aggressive with their promotions, and they think they see something in him where he'll be able to succeed in Toledo.
Yeah, it's my suspicion that what he has done this spring basically convinced him that he can handle AAA pitching.
Yeah.
But I personally would love to have him come back and repeat part of AA, dominate, get a solid grasp on AA pitching, then get up to Toledo, and then from there, who knows, September call-up might have been in the works. Hard to say.
So that's it for Detroit. They're probably... We shouldn't say that's it. Like, their system is void of any talent whatsoever. When we're saying studs, we're saying guys that when they come up, they're going to be all-star caliber players. Like, we're not talking about, like, Garrett Jones good. Like, right. You know, Garrett Jones might hit you 25 home runs. In a good year last year, he hit you 270. We're talking about, like, guys that could come up and you could conceivably see them in an all-star game. And I think, you know, and the other thing I think people need to understand, too, when we're talking about these prospects that could come up and dominate is how difficult it is to be successful at baseball to begin with. I mean, you look at, like, David Eckstein was the player that always caught a lot of grief from people because he's, like, 5'9", doesn't look like a baseball player. Like, David Eckstein is better at baseball than anybody who has ever made fun of him, ever, for his height. Like, those high school, you know, those high school stars that come out and they're like, oh, David Eckstein, I'm better than David Eckstein. Like, David Eckstein on his worst day is better than any of these people who are giving him grief to begin with. So, like, the fact that these players, you know, we're not calling them, like, stud players. It's not, like, a knock on anyone. It's just saying when these players come up, we're thinking they're going to be coming up and being all-star caliber players.
And not just us. It's other people on the web that rank prospects too.
Yeah.
Are having the same evaluation typically.
As well. Yeah, absolutely, within the industry. Yeah. With Pittsburgh, when you're talking about players that could come up and be dominant at their position, it boils down to two players that we're looking at as big studs, which is Gerrit Cole and Jameson Taillon. Gerrit Cole last season worked his way up through everywhere. He started out in single A, made most of his starts in double A, and then had a few starts in triple A at the end, concluding with a not so great performance in the triple A playoffs. But the good thing about his performance in the triple A postseason, general manager Neil Huntington said this offseason that Gerrit Cole really developed as a pitcher during that game where he was just getting shellacked, because his approach was, when he started to fall behind and get in trouble in counts, was to just rear back and throw the ball harder. And he realized when he was trying to do that in AAA, all of a sudden, everybody can hit a fastball here, buddy. So it was kind of that aha moment where it clicked with him, where all of a sudden he realized, this is why they're harping on these things. This is why they're working on developing that third pitch with me. So he's going to start out the season again in AAA. Most people expect to see him up in the Pirates rotation at some point this season. And he was ranked by, I want to say MLB.com. It was MLB.com. He's the 9th best prospect in all of baseball, according to MLB.com. 8th best prospect in baseball, according to Keith Law. It'll be interesting to kind of see how he can contribute to a club that a lot of people are feeling, I guess, somewhat optimistic about going into this season relative to years prior.
It's spring, so.
Yeah, spring.
Optimism.
Yeah, everybody's optimistic. And then Jameson Taillon. He's the other, you know, we're looking at Cole and Taillon as being our 1-2 guys right there at the top of the rotation. He throws a 2-seam, 4-seam, and a really heavy curveball, and they're working on developing a changeup with him as well. Yeah, he pitched his final 4 starts in Bradenton before getting called up to Double A Altoona last season, and he threw 17 innings for the curve. So it'll be interesting to see and watch him develop as well this season. And, you know, we're looking at Taillon contributing within the next 2 years as well, so hopefully we'll have those guys at the top. So we're going to look at next in each organization, some of the projectables. So projectables are going to be those players that they might have a great skill set or a particularly great skill. They may do one thing exceptionally well, a lot of things really well, but one of the things they're all going to have in common is they're all young. So they're those kind of players that you see that, wow, you know, like, this guy's great. He hits for average. You know, he's got a little bit of pop. He's hitting some doubles, stealing some bases, but maybe he's doing it all down in the Gulf Coast League or, you know, down in short season. So we're going to look at some of the projectables that each of our organizations have. Jason, let's go over to Cleveland. Who are some of the projectable players? Some of the players that could contribute, have great skill sets, but are still far off from Cleveland.
Well, there's a lot of those guys in Cleveland. The top of the system is pretty bare, but the bottom of the system is really deep as far as young guys who project to have a lot of skills and a lot of abilities in the major leagues in the future, especially when you look at the middle of the diamond. The Indians are absolutely loaded at pretty much every level. below double A this year because some of their guys will be promoted to that level to begin this year. So pretty much from that level down, the Indians have good middle infield prospects. One I want to start off with is Jose Ramirez. He's a guy who is very small, and it kind of reminds me of the David Eckstein comments you were making. So for a lot of his career, he's been given the, you know, not given the benefit of the doubt because he's small. Everyone's, well, you know, he doesn't really look like he has the size to continue to hit like that. Well, he still doesn't look like he has the size to hit like that, even if he did last year. Well, he still doesn't have the... He's still not big enough. He can't hit like that, even though he's done it year after year. And this is a guy who, despite all of that, has continued to absolutely rake at just about every level. He's hit 325, 364, 354 as he's going across low minor leagues. He's got plus speed. He makes a lot of good contact, you know, when he's in the box, and he has the ability to be a true leadoff prospect, not just because of the speed, but he has that great contact bat that you really would want in a real true leadoff hitter, you know. So he kind of puts both of those together. The problem is he plays second base or shortstop, and there's plenty of those guys in the Indian system. He is probably more likely to stick at those positions, though, as opposed to some of the other guys we'll get to. He was in he was on the same team as Lindor last year, and he will probably continue on the same team as Lindor this year, and those two were just making absolute highlight reel double play turns on a nightly basis last year. So it'll be fun. Probably they're going to be in the Carolina League this year, so I won't be able to see them unless I can set up some kind of
field trip
down there. But if you're in the area, that'd be a great place to go see the two of these guys play together. The other one is Dorsis Paulino. He, in some ways, is not the opposite of Ramirez, but he's a much more physically raw, talented player and a much more offensive-minded shortstop. He has good plate discipline, which is, in some respects, unique for a young Latin player, as they tend to strike out a lot and chase balls in the dirt. He has very good plate discipline. His swing is very smooth and easy with plenty of power. He, because of his frame, is one you might look to see converted to third base eventually, because as he continues to fill out, it'll be interesting to see if he can maintain the mobility and range to play shortstop. Tony Wolters is another middle infield prospect. He'll be at Akron this year. He's had a few injuries, so, you know, he's a name that was big a few years ago and has kind of fallen off and then come back on recently as he's gotten over some of those problems. They started him at high A last year, which was a level jump for him, and he really struggled in the beginning and then came on just like gangbusters about halfway through the season, which the Indians took as a sign that they were right to jump him levels, that they basically said, well, we knew he could handle it, and he has the maturity and the mental toughness to struggle and overcome it. That's why we jumped him. Part of the reason they jumped him is because they have so many young middle infielders beneath him. They needed him to move up another level. But he's the kind of guy that is a really good defender, and it'll be interesting to see how his bat develops. Tyler Naquin is another guy who the Indians drafted. They picked him in the first round in 2012. He caught a little flack for his pick, which I thought was unfounded, because their outfield at the time was so incredibly thin and their system was so devoid of outfield prospects. It's kind of like he was widely regarded as the best pure hitter in the draft, and he plays the outfield. So it's kind of, to me, it was a no-brainer. Why would you not pick this guy? The problem, or the rub with Naquin, I guess, is he played right field a lot in college, but his bat profile is more as a center fielder. And so the question is, can he stick in center defensively? The Indians really believe that he can, and they actually really believe that he has more power in his swing, that because of his role on the Texas team in college, he was looking more to just get on base and not try to drive in runs, not try to hit for power. So we'll see what happens. But his great asset beyond his hitting is his arm in the outfield. He has the best arm in the Indian system. In college, he would routinely actually make the play where he fields the ball off the right field wall behind him barehanded and throws the runner out at second. It became like you don't run on Naquin. It was the definition of a long single every time the ball was hit over his head. So he has a really, really outstanding arm. And then there's Ronnie Rodriguez, who I'm not going to go into too much because he's another middle infield prospect. He's kind of in the Dorsey Paulino mindset, I guess, of just being a really physical, raw, athletic player. And we'll see how he continues to develop. Jesus Aguilar is the last guy I'd like to talk about a little. He's a big physical player. He's got the best power in the Indian system. And he's actually, for his size, a much better defender than people give him credit for. He won't ever play anywhere other than first, although he came up playing a few other positions. He's going to play first now. And he has the potential to be a major league average first baseman, both with his bat and his glove. He's really started to come together, though. So it'll be interesting to see if he can develop into more than that, if he can somehow turn himself into an impact first baseman, which is something the Indians haven't had since Jim Thome. So those are the kind of young, you know, projectable guys the Indians currently have. Wolters and Aguilar, I would look for them to be in Akron this year. So if you're in the Erie, you know, Ohio area, those are guys you could easily see. Unfortunately, like I said, Ramirez and Lindor will be in Carolina probably.
I'll make sure to check them out when I'm down there next time.
Yeah, you do that.
Head over to the Mudcat, the old Mudcat Stadium.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, if you haven't been there, is one of the more unique stadiums I've been to in that they stick a net all the way around the entire field so that no foul balls get into the stands like that.
Well, they're going to need that with Lindor and Ramirez this year. some ropes.
Lacing them in there. Well, let's look at some of Detroit's projectable players. Who do we have in the Detroit system that's kind of young, maybe a little more upside, but we're projecting a lot based on their age?
Basically, there's several guys I want to speak a moment about. Similar to Cleveland in a way, the Tigers organization has a little bit of depth at the middle infield spots. We'll discuss more of them as we get up to different levels of the organization. But first begin with Danry Vasquez, who actually Jason and I got the chance to see him last year in Mahoning Valley when they hosted the 2012 New York Penn League All-Star Game. That's right. And he came over and signed a baseball from a young fan, which is very pleasing to both him and I, as we like seeing that from the athletes there. Great skill set. Sorry, I can't talk today.
It's his first day talking. He's a little nervous.
He was very, very unlucky last year. We look at his peripherals at the plate. So he got a demotion to Connecticut, which then he made the All-Star team here at Penn League for them and had a nice, solid season. I expect that he'll continue to grow as a player. He's very, very young for his age and probably stick with either Connecticut or start off the year with West Michigan Whitecaps. A lot of upside, but very, very young and raw. Next guy talk about a moment is Jake Thompson, a Texas high school pitcher. Throws four pitches. Currently reaches about a low 90s fastball with a nice slider to complement the curve and change. He dominated in his brief time professional baseball last year, and he's a tremendous upside as well. Austin Schatz is a Texas outfielder with tremendous plus-plus speed. The organization is very high on him, so I'd be curious to see how he develops. Power-wise, I'm not sure they project him to have a lot of power, but definitely his defense and versatility will be helpful to the organization. And then lastly, the first of the couple middle info guys is a guy named Eugenio Suarez, which he's an interesting guy. I think he's a Venezuelan prospect, shortstop, second base material. He actually had a play the other day in spring training where he's playing third base, ironically, and I forget who they was playing against. Hit a rope of a ground ball, hot shot right at the corner. He deflects it off his glove into the air. As it comes down, he grabs it with his bare hand and tosses a dart without a stride or a step at all and throws the runner out. It was an awesome play. And you can catch that highlight on MLB.com, too, Tigers page.
So that kind of stuff is amazing, too. And that's the kind of stuff that really, it'll stick with people. People will see that and they'll remember that. I kind of call it the David Wright syndrome, where you talk to sabermetricians who look at David Wright and they say defensively he's not that great of a third baseman. But when I think of David Wright, I think of that over-the-shoulder diving catch that he made with his bare hand. Oh, man,
that's awesome.
And, like, how do you quantify that? He just caught a ball with his bare hand. Like, how do you...
If you're a scout, too, those are the plays that stick in your mind.
Right.
When you're watching a player, you know, when you watch him make that play or you watch... a right fielder take a ball bare hand off the wall and throw someone out a second. Those are the kind of things that you bring back to your team, you know, when you're trying to explain to them.
And it's tough. It is tough to quantify it. And I get where this, you know, the statistically minded people say, well, if he was faster, he would have got there. Yeah, but he's working with the skill set that he has. He wasn't able to get there, but he was able to catch the ball with his bare hand. So, I mean, I kind of understand in that capacity where, and I guess, I don't know, I haven't looked at Suarez's metrics or what people say about his defense, but I'd be curious to see if that level of play continues kind of the label that he gets.
And there's a big difference between a guy making an outstanding play with the bare hand, like David Wright or Suarez, versus, I remember a highlight as a young child watching Kevin Mitchell of the Giants caught a fly ball in the outfield barehanded. That was a result of him, I think, just being a little bit slower and less athletic than other guys in the outfield.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as far as Pirates projectable players go, we have a group of outfielders, young outfielders, starting with our $5 million man, Josh Bell, who we talked out of college. We have our Pittsburgh 2012 Organizational Player of the Year, Gregory Polanco, who's incredibly projectable, and Barrett Barnes. And they're all three outfielders. Like I said, Polanco was the Organizational Prospect of the Year for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He'll probably open up the season in Bradenton. Last year, he had a triple slash line of 325, 388, 522. So he was putting up phenomenal numbers last season. So those are three guys that they have huge ceilings, but a lot of development left to go. I guess a lot of people like to comp Gregory Polanco to Starling Marte. That seems to be kind of the popular comparison. Along with those guys, we also have Alan Hansen, shortstop, again, young. He was raking last year. You know, he kind of was streaky a little bit. He wasn't as consistent as Polanco. And along with Hansen in the middle infield, we also have Dilson Herrera, who, young, projectable, middle infield type. He seems to be favored at second base because he doesn't really have the arm strength for anywhere else, and that seems to be kind of the knock on him. We have my personal favorite, Wyatt Matheson, 19 years old. Just, you know, his ceiling is fantastic. You know, his ceiling is kind of like, I've heard a lot of people compare him to Matt Wieters, which, you know, if you can get a player like that at an important position like catcher, that's amazing. And then we have two pitchers, Nick Kingham and Luis Heredia, who are, you know, both, again, high upside guys, very projectable, a lot of skill, a lot of ability. So it's just kind of making sure that we keep them developmentally on the right track so that they're able and ready to contribute to the major league club. Heredia, I want to say he's 17 or 18 this season. We'll probably more than likely see him at Jamestown. I haven't seen if he's been assigned or if he's still just in the minor league spring training as of right now. So those are the projectables for each of our organizations. Next, we're going to look at contributors. So this is going to be a class of players who could contribute this season to a major league club. Their ceilings probably aren't as high as those stud type players or even as some of those projectable players, but they could help immediately to a major league team right now. So let's start off with Jason in Cleveland. Who are some of those contributors that you could see?
Well, it's going to be kind of interesting, actually, because for a system that's so devoid of pitching talent, the contributors pretty much all line up in the bullpen. And some of these guys actually have already been named to the Indians opening day bullpen, so you will be seeing them. A guy like Nick Hagedone, who's a big left-hander. He's very physical. He's 6'5", 230 pounds. His stuff is just electric. He's shown that in the past, both in the majors, the minors, and he's been showing it all spring training. He's got a really nasty slider. Maturity and consistency are really just the issues with Hagedone at this point. The stuff isn't a question. He's never going to be a starter again. That's long gone. But he has the ability to be a really dominant left-handed reliever. And if he can consistently perform like he did for parts of last year, and show the maturity of not punching the dugout wall when he doesn't perform to that level and breaking his hand, You know, he can be a really big part of the Cleveland bullpen for a while. The other guy that's going to start the year in the Cleveland bullpen is Cody Allen. He's got electric stuff, and he's had a really quick rise to the big leagues. He's got a real nice heater. He sits around 95. He can get it up around 98 when he wants to. The devastating part for Cody Allen is to go with that 98-mile-an-hour fastball. He's got a pretty nasty curveball. That can be a tough combination in the late innings of a game. And that's where he projects as a reliever. He'll start as a middle reliever now, but the idea is that someday he could be in the back end of that bullpen, maybe in the role Vinny Pastano's in right now when Chris Perez finds his way out of Cleveland someday. Which could be soon, later, who knows? That'll work itself out, I guess.
That's a very predictive statement there.
Yeah. Well, I guess what I'm saying is Chris Perez, you know, whatever happens with his arbitration, when those years are over, he won't be in Cleveland anymore. So that'll be the start of the Vinny Pastano era. But Cody Allen, you know, that's what they're looking as far as his next step is becoming the next Vinny Pastano on the team. The other bullpen guys that could be contributors this year, that jumps to mind anyway, is Trey Haley. This is a really dominant reliever through the minor leagues the last several years that people don't hear a lot about. He's got a 96 to 98 mile an hour fastball, and when he really wants to, he's throwing it over the plate multiple times at about 100 or 101. And so this is a guy that, you know, he can handle it with his frame. He's 6'4", 205. And, you know, if you want to think about some of these guys that come out of high school, when Haley started with the Indians, he was 6'4", 170. You know, nobody's going to be throwing 101 when they're 6'4", and 170 pounds, or at least being able to do it consistently. But when you're talking 6'4", 205, you get more in that realm where you can do that on a day-to-day basis and get major leaguers out. And then when you put a nice curve that he's got on top, that's about 77 to 81, that's a big difference. And he's got some other, you know, pitches he's always working on. But that's a guy that I think could be up in the Indians' bullpen at some point this year, as far as Trey Haley. Scott Barnes is another guy. We've talked about him on the podcast before. A nice left-hander that kind of is in limbo a little bit as far as, you know, whether he's going to stay as a reliever or go back to starting. With the lack of starting pitching depth the Indians have, in some respects I'd like to see Barnes go back and try to start. I think he has the stuff to do that. I think that's not going to happen this year, though, because they want him as their third lefty behind Hagedorn and Hill. So for Barnes' development and the impact he could have on the team, I do hope he becomes a starter once again, but we'll see how he plays out. He certainly can be a contributor in the bullpen if that's where the Indians want to use him.
So those are some names to keep an eye on this season in Cleveland. Those are guys that you might see up this season that could be helping out the team right now. Let's look at Detroit, and does Detroit have any names that we should be keeping an eye on for contributions this year?
Yes, I do, actually. I have about six guys here, I think, that might possibly spend time in Detroit in the course of 2013 season.
And some of them might be at single A right now.
not quite these guys, probably, but one we're very familiar with in the podcast is Abascal Garcia, who was recently placed on the 15-day disabled list, but you could very well likely see him at some point in time back up with the club. Another guy we spent a lot of time talking about was just recently optioned to Toledo is Bruce Rondon, the hard, flame-throwing right-hander who made radar guns light up with triple digits consistently, but hasn't found the consistency to control and command his pitches. So I look forward to him be back up eventually. It probably depends on how his development goes in Toledo, as well as the current bullpen staff in Detroit, how will they perform. The hard-tossing left-hander Casey Crosby, who's coming back from an injury a little bit, will begin the year in Toledo. And it's possible, depending on how Porcello does and maybe Drew Smiley, if Crosby could ever break into that Detroit rotation that's basically held down by four solid guys aren't going anywhere anytime soon. A long shot, perhaps, but one that they could contribute and manager Jim Leland was very high on this spring was Tyler Collins. He is expected to begin the season Double-A Erie, but as we know, Detroit loves to promote their prospects through the system rapidly. James McCann, a catcher, he spent time in Erie this past season, and probably spent time there this season as well. Offensively, not the strongest, but he's well known for his defense. And it's something that this club, I think, could definitely
benefit. Tigers could use a defensive catcher.
Yes, as a defensive catcher. Avila has had some injury problems. Their backstop to him, Brian Pena, I don't think is, I don't know. I mean, the most a solid backup catcher. McCann could push him, definitely, just for his defense alone, I believe.
I wonder if they could pry Gerald Laird from the hands of Atlanta.
I think Gerald Laird's supposed to be this opening day starter, I believe, for the Atlanta Braves, a catcher.
You know, I heard a long dissertation on SiriusXM MLB home plate the other day about the Braves catching situation without McCann. It's not very pretty. I mean, there's a lot of guys there, you know, a lot of prospects. One is, he's the son of a former major league catcher. The name is not with me right now, but there's a lot of options there, and Gerald Laird is probably standing out at the top. That's all I'm going to say.
So, Detroit, you have a leg up on the Atlanta Braves catching situation this season. And then finally, a guy who is a son of a former hitting coach for Detroit and Cleveland is Daniel Fields, who is supposed to begin the season manning center field for our Double-A Erie Seawolves. Defensively, he could play right now at the big club. Offensively, still a little bit of work in progress, but he could be another guy you might see, you know, July injury, September call-up.
All right. Well, let's move on to Pittsburgh. And if we're taking a look at Pittsburgh, some guys that you could see contributing, we have three pitchers right now who have been optioned down to AAA Indianapolis. We have Kyle McPherson, who is my personal favorite to win the fifth spot in the rotation, who did nothing of the sort this spring. We had Brian Morris, a hopeful high-leverage relief pitcher. And we have Justin Wilson, who is actually sticking with the big club right now, and he's going to be starting off on the Pirates' active roster right now. When we're talking about McPherson just had a brutal spring, and I think it just kind of demonstrated that he needs a little bit more refinement down in the minors. He has a great walk rate. Last year in Double-A, he had 9.2 K to walk rate. I mean, it's phenomenal. We're talking like Cliff Lee level there, you know, which obviously you probably won't expect to see that in the majors, but the skill's there. So they're going to give him some time to develop with that. Other than that, like I said, Justin Wilson is already going to be sticking with the club in the bullpen. And Tony Sanchez, who's been perennially, you know, like you've been hearing it, it's we're getting into the J.R. House territory now, which makes me kind of nervous.
Oh, no.
Every year.
J.R. House.
Yeah. Every year it's Tony Sanchez. And then this season we were kind of expecting him to take that leap, and then we went out and signed Russell Martin. And Tony Sanchez is, I'm going to say he's 25 this season. He's getting to the age where, all right, buddy, like, when are you going to start producing? So I'll kind of be curious to see how they handle Tony Sanchez. I think if McHenry struggles at all, you could see Sanchez come up because he plays great defense behind the dish. That's been the one thing that's been consistent with him. So he could come up and he could contribute defensively to Pittsburgh right away. Well, lastly, we're going to look at players to watch. These are just going to be, we're going to rattle off some names, give you some ideas of some players to keep an eye on. These players, they may have fallen outside our top 20, or they may be towards the lower end of our top 20, but they're just kind of some names to keep an eye on because they've either done some things that are great or possess some kind of skill that could translate. So let's start with Jason and the Cleveland Indians. Who are some players to keep an eye on?
Well, one guy's Dylan Howard, who was a second round draft pick 2 years ago. He had a very, very disappointing spring for a lot of reasons. So he's someone to keep an eye on because he still has a lot of talent and he's had one disappointing season. So there's still, you know, a lot of optimism there. Another guy's Mitch Brown, who was the second round pick this last draft. He's a right-handed pitcher out of high school. He's already thrown 96 out of high school. So the idea, you know, of what he could become when he gets put into a major league conditioning program is pretty tantalizing, I guess. And the last guy is a personal favorite of mine, Joey Wendell. He went to Westchester, which is part of the PSAC, which is Edinburgh, which is where I went, was part of the PSAC as well. And Joey Wendell actually won the PSAC Triple Crown his last year in high of college. So he was a Division II player, but the Indian scouts really fell in love with him. They thought when they looked at him that he could have been a very solid player on any Division I team. And his problem is he plays second base and third base, which is pretty jammed up in the organization. So it'll be interesting this year to see if he tries to move to first or the outfield or what exactly they try to do, because as these guys get stacked up, Joey Wendell's not going to have every day at bats at second base.
And he's older too, I believe.
Yeah, because he went to college. You know, compared to these young Latin players they have, or those guys that just came out of high school, you know, they're going to go with them because they're much more projectable. So that's another guy to watch.
All right, let's move over to Detroit. Who do we have in Detroit? Might be some players to keep an eye on this season.
A guy I would consider to be like a mini version of Bruce Rondon is a player named Melvin Mercedes, who was in the spring this year but had control problems, and he needs to work on control, obviously, but he's a hard-throwing right-hander. Up next is a tall, Richie Sexton-type figure named Stephen Moya.
Oh, no. The big sexy.
Oh, no.
The guy lost part of his season due to injury, and he's bouncing back. He has loads of power potential, but obviously when you stand 6'7", the chances of repeating that swing consistently is an obstacle that he has to work on.
Tend to get a little long.
A little bit long there.
A little long swing there.
Hopefully he can avoid separated shoulders, though, which Sexton did that one time while playing for Diamondbacks. It was a gruesome injury.
You swing so hard, you rip your shoulder open.
Yes. Now, the last two pair of middle infield prospects that you guys will be able to see opening day in Erie will be Hernan Perez and Harold Castro. So get a chance to check those two guys out. Solid defense up middle of the field.
We'll take some notes and get back to
you. We'll do that.
There you go. Thank you. Keith Law was very high in this pitcher, a big right-hander named Montreal Robertson. Apparently he throws upper 90s fastball, but beyond that, I don't really have a lot of information, as does Claw. I mean, Claw has a lot more information, obviously, than I do. So, Drew Van Hagen is another young armor to keep an eye on, right-hander. A guy coming off an injury, he lost all 2012 season, is Brenny Paulino, who had a very high upside before the injury took him out of last season. And lastly, left-hander, who just made his professional debut last year, is Logan Ehlers. If I pronounce that right, if I don't, I'm sorry.
We'll go check it out on Baseball Reference. We'll see if they have a correct pronunciation.
There you go.
Well, let's wrap up with players to watch with the Pittsburgh Pirates, players to watch. There's a couple that I like personally, just based on things that I've read, games that I've watched. One player that I think I'm definitely going to keep a close eye on this year is Willie Peralta. Peralta has loads of talent, lots of pop. If you read my article at all about the top 20 prospects, you saw that there were stretches where Willie Peralta was lighting the world on fire, and then stretches where he couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. So I think, and not to just draw a comparison for namesake, but it seems to remind me of Willie Mopeña a lot, where, you know, he could just mash the ball, or he's going to do nothing for you productivity-wise. So I'm going to be keeping a close eye on him. Another one to keep an eye on is Max Moroff. He's a projected shortstop. He has all the skills to stick there. He had 67 at-bats in the Gulf Coast League last year, and one of the things that I loved about Moroff, just looking in this, you know, tiny sample size, is that he walked more than he struck out. I believe he had 17 walks to 11 strikeouts. So you love to see that skill, and you hope that that's something else that translates. Filthy Phil, Philip Irwin. Filthy Phil, he's...
Is that your nickname, or...?
No, that's his Twitter handle. Okay. Filthy Phil. You can go follow him on Twitter there. All right, then. @FilthyPhil. Pitcher to keep an eye on. Alex Dickerson is the other big hitter that I'm also going to be keeping an eye on. He projects to be a first baseman. They're not sure how quite they're going to fit him in, but he's got a lot of pop, some decent plate discipline, so we'll be keeping an eye on him as well. All right, well, let's answer some questions. Let's do some tweet mails. Tweet mails. Our first question that we had was from Facebook, James Patterson. He said, I'd be curious to hear your opinion on the progress of Stetson Alley.
Oh, no.
If any of you are familiar with the...
Tugging at the heartstrings of Andy.
The legend that is Stetson Alley. We drafted Stetson Alley with a $2.25 million signing bonus as a pitcher. And
that's all right. The Pirates got lots of money.
Right? Yeah. No. Hey, I'm cool with that. That's great. He could throw 100 miles an hour. We drafted him as like an upper tier or a middle of the rotation starter, or a high leverage relief pitcher with his talent. I mean, he was throwing triple digit fastballs in high school, and we realized over the course of the last couple years that pitching was not something that he was good at. So we moved him back into the field, and we tried moving him as an organization to third base. I say we like I'm part of the organization. The Pirates tried moving him to third base, and then this season realized, hey, we're putting too much pressure on this kid, and they moved him to first base. According to Robert Temple of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, he said that Ali's going to be moved from third base to first base because it's less demanding defensively. So Neil Huntington said that he'd become too mechanical, and this whole thing kind of started out as an experiment of just how can we get you to feel normal baseball movements again. You know, they said like he just looked like he was thinking about every single thing that he was doing. So they let him go hit in the cage one day, and he's hitting in the cage and he goes, yeah, that feels good. And they're like, well, okay, let's go try back out in the field again. So that was what they did. I mean, his control issues were awful. You can go find videos, people who went to extended spring training games. There was one where he plunked a guy in the back with a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and you're watching it, and you're just like, this is like Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn.
He had what you might call a psychotic reaction.
I mean, it was awful. And if you can go pull his numbers up on Baseball Reference. I don't even want to mention them on here because they're just that bad. So they're going to try him out in the field. According to Keith Law, he was considered a solid bat coming out of high school. He stated that he has raw power. Obviously, he has a plus arm. But the issue with him is that the power comes before the hit, you know, so they're really going to have to work on developing him. He's a project. I mean, we're starting from scratch with this kid. So I think, honestly, after hearing this whole tale, it would have been better had he just gone to the University of North Carolina and just let him develop in college with, you know, a significant amount of less pressure. But so that's the story of Stetson Alley. It's a tragic tale for Pirates fans everywhere, but hopefully Alley will get himself back on track and maybe he can contribute someday as a Rick Ankiel kind of story.
Wow, it's really spring. He's very hopeful right now. Yeah.
I'm just saying. He's got talent. Our second tweet, this one's going to be enjoyable, gents, comes from our buddy Dan Keller on Twitter. You can follow him at Dan Keller Jr. He wants to know, who has the best top prospects based on Tri-State of Mind baseball rankings? He gives us a couple names to look at here.
Not Detroit.
I think Detroit falls out pretty fast.
So Bob's taking Detroit's hat out of the ring. He has Cole. Who do you like more? Cole Talion, Alan Hansen, Nick Castellanos, Avisail Garcia, Bruce Rondon, or Francisco Lindor, Trevor Bauer, and Dorcy's Paulino?
Well,
so if we're eliminating Detroit right off the bat,
yes, and now it's fair to say that Detroit's out.
Now we're looking at Cleveland's and Pittsburgh's. Jason, would you like to start out with your opening statement of why you think Cleveland's
make the case
prospects are better?
If I was arguing before the court, I'd say that of those three for the Indians, there's less projection involved than the three presented for the Pirates. Bauer is, you know, AAA, almost major league ready. Paulino has a lot of projection ahead of him, but Lindor is a guy, as I said earlier, that could probably be major league average right now. We were discussing before we started recording, you know, if you plug Francisco Lindor into the Indians lineup right now, he probably looks a lot like Elvis Andrus in his first season. You know, a little overwhelmed, not quite physically ready batting wise, but defensively better than, you know, a lot of shortstops, you know, guys like Johnny Peralta and stuff. You know, I this just came to me. I heard Johnny Peralta being talked about the other day on the radio. The guy was like, well, what he gets to, he handles. Yeah, well, okay. But, you know, you take a guy like Lindor and that range just doubled or tripled, you know. I mean, and we're not being facetious. Like, that's the reality. So I guess just with the volatility of pitching prospects and that, I would argue for the Indians.
Well, that's a very sound argument. I'm gonna.
What's your argument here for the Pirates?
Thank you, mediator. I'm going to go ahead and say We have Garrett Cole, who's already more advanced than Trevor Bauer right now. Garrett Cole is, he's going to be up this season at the All-Star break. We're all, it's almost a certainty for Pittsburgh at this point.
If I may stop you for one moment, what do you mean by more advanced? Because last I knew, Bauer has logged major league innings.
Oh, he has. Yeah. Hey, you want to go, you want to go look at those four starts that he has in
Arizona?
With
a pulled groin.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, whatever.
Great start against Dodgers. I believe he allowed no earned or one run in six innings.
Hey, his numbers aren't up there. His numbers aren't in the four starts.
The fact that Cole's going to be up this season doesn't really...
Cole...
So's Bauer.
Or Bauer, yeah.
Cole has two plus pitches with a potential third plus pitch. You know, you can work with Trevor Bauer and the gyro ball or whatever kind of crazy stuff he's throwing, but Cole is going to come out of the door. He's going to come out shoving with two plus pitches, possibly three plus pitches.
Does Garrett Cole rap, though?
He doesn't rap, no. Okay.
I'm pretty sure they're saying Bauer has three plus pitches.
Not to my knowledge. Are they saying Bauer has three plus? Okay, well, I'm still taking Cole and his 100-mile-an-hour fastball over Bauer.
So that's one.
So, and... you might have me with
he's
Dorsey's
all flustered now.
Yeah, I really am. Now I'm looking at it like, maybe I should have made the argument for Cleveland. I don't know. I'm like, Jason's a very...
I think, you know, like the Cole Bauer thing at best is a wash.
That's what I was going to say. I think
you
it's
know,
a wash.
I,
similar background.
It's hard to determine, you know, when you have these two guys just like just on the cusp
yeah.
of major league, serious major league service time, how they'll translate. So, I mean, if we said that those two are a wash, or even if we slightly give it to Cole to ease Andy's, you know, anxieties, he's shaking right now.
Listen, I'm telling you,
at the thought of it being a wash.
6 foot four, he's a hoss, 210 pounds. He's coming out there. He's got the frame for it.
Anyways,
your next player, Andy.
Then you know, yeah. Then we have to look at the other players.
Right.
Well, Jameson Taillon, obviously another top 20 ranked prospect by MLB.
And Canadian.
What's that?
And Canadian too.
And Canadian. Yeah, he's he's Canadian. All right, from Texas.
Drink a pint of maple syrup and raise right. the Jolly Roger.
So I think we have more at the top. I think Cole and Taillon are less risky than what Cleveland has at the top with Lindor and Paulino, especially Lindor and Paulino. As much as you want to say about Lindor, and as good as you know, you could plug him in and think he could be good right now. You know, there's still a lot of projectability with the age, a lot of development that you're expecting to happen right now. Cole and Taillon have everything there physically right now. Right now with them, it's just refining things like command of a third pitch or, you know, control of a second pitch. And I think for me, it comes down to how do you think Hanson and Paulino, compare when you're comparing those two together, which, you know, again, Hanson is, you know, a very projectable player. Because he is so far off, you know, you're expecting a lot of things to go right with Hanson, but you're expecting a lot of things to go right with Dorsey's Paulino as well. So,
and both guys, I believe, are projected to have a lot of power too, correct?
Yeah, that's the big knock on Hanson is his defense. A lot of people don't think that he's going to be able to stick it short. They think they're going to have to end up shifting him somewhere else because he's not going to have the glove to stick it short.
Paulino has a very, you know, advanced bat, you know, that's the projection anyway. As far as short, you know, they go back and forth. I mean, the reality is there's going to come a point where it doesn't make sense to pursue Paulino to be a shortstop anymore because Lindor's ahead of him in the system. And obviously the ideal situation is once Lindor arrives in the major leagues, he's going to be the shortstop for the next 6, 8, 10 years, hopefully. So Paulino, the real thought is probably because of his more kind of physical raw frame that he would become a third baseman. So, you know, but so to look at the power aspect, they believe that he has the power to transition from short to third. So he certainly has a power element to his swing. I guess when I look at it, you know, it's hard to compare the two because you're comparing primarily a pitching top three against a primarily middle infielder top three. While they're both valuable, you know, and GMs slobber up and down about guys up the middle, the value of a pitcher compared to a value of a position player, even if he is a shortstop or a third baseman, it's hard to compare the two.
The big thing that I like with the pitching prospects, and if you do it correctly, I think San Francisco, the Giants, have demonstrated they're investing a lot of stock in their young arms, developing those pitchers, and then they're kind of filling in the bats as the season progresses when they need someone. Where they go get an Aubrey Huff, or they go get a Marco Scudero, or they go get a bat to plug in somewhere. I think, at least right now, you know, that kind of seems to be the mindset with their organization, and that's how they've brought those championships into San Francisco, is getting those stud arms, locking them down, and then filling in everything else kind of as they go along, patchwork. So I, with Pittsburgh, I'm pleased with the fact that they have two of those prospects up at the top that are on the cusp of, you know, potentially being great for the Pirates. So what do you think?
Say you, Mediator?
What do you think, Mediator?
I say that the edge goes to the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Oh,
hey!
I also give a little bit of advantage because as much as I like Bauer, Bauer was acquired via trade.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Have all been
that's not
signed.
Entering into... That doesn't matter.
It all matters to the Mediator. I will have to say that I won this debate despite myself. So I say the debate goes to Jason, but the result goes to the Pirates.
I don't know how that makes any sense. How's
that feel? All right, let's get to our last tweet mail. This last one comes from our buddy Mick Reinhardt over at Mayflies and Big Flies. You can follow him on Twitter at Mayflies. And he said, interested in your thoughts on Dean Green. In this day and age, is his lack of a position a nail in his coffin? Red, why don't you go ahead and take care of this one, buddy, because you're the resident Detroit expert.
Yes, the trying to be one, I guess, obviously.
The resident on the fly.
Dean Green, I had just outside my top 20. On the overall top 20 prospects, and I do believe, Mick, that his lack of position is a nail in his coffin as far as a future with the organization. For those that have no idea who he is, he's a first baseman, DH type of player. He's a big, big guy, 6'4", 255, 260 pounds. Ooh. Bats from left side, throws right-handed. He's 23 now, he'll be 24 in June. He was a 11th round draft choice from Barry University in Florida in 2011. Some of the positives, he has a tremendous amount of power alongside solid contact skills too. So a 300 average isn't out of the question if he plays every day. He's shown some decent patience at the plate. He had an 8.3% walk rate across three levels last year of 446 plate appearances. Nothing's been said officially, but I would hope that he would begin the season or get there soon to Double-A Erie, and become the first baseman DH type player for our Seawolves locally. And then that way it gives us a chance to watch him in person. I believe that his future with the club is in doubt because guys like Prince Fielder is signed through 2017, Miguel Cabrera signed through 2015, and Victor Martinez signed through 2014. Plus, you know, factor in the fact that Castellanos will be coming to Detroit here soon. Avisel Garcia should be there. Guys like Tyler Collins will be knocking on doorstep by then. Daniel Fields, Quentin Berry. This goes on and on and on.
Well, if it's one thing that we've seen, though, in baseball, it's that a bat's going to play somewhere. Even if, you know, you're Jesus right. Montero, they're going to find a spot for you somewhere. You might not be able to catch, but we'll stick you there until we get something better, and then we'll stick you at DH.
That's what, you know, we talked about this beforehand. To me, it's going to be a valuable trade piece. You know, come All-Star break, Detroit's looking for perhaps a reliever. You never know. Maybe he's shipped off to a team looking for an extra bat. Or maybe he's packaged along with a Porcello or a Smiley to acquire some other piece of the puzzle for their championship run. So,
all right. Well, thanks for that, Bob. Yep. Big thanks to all of our listeners. We really appreciate all the emails, tweets, everything else coming in. So we hope you enjoyed our first annual Prospect Spectacular here at Tri-State of Mind Baseball. Keep your ears to the ground. We'll be having our weekly podcast still coming out this week. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll talk to you soon.